today's show. Coach Prime is fired up. Jim Harbaugh is honorary captain. The NCAA can't suspend him for that. Ross rides the little train in Morgantown, and a poisoning story.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
We need to become a chess pod. This is great.
Russ Dellinger.
DRT Club.
And SI's Pat Forty.
He's always been hit on the head a few times. He may not remember things like...
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And Pat and I are back in the United States. I know you're all excited about that, sure.
Not as excited as we are.
No, not as excited as we are. Ice in a drink. Amazing. Amazing concept. Yeah.
Got it right here.
It's amazing awesome. Concept. My daughter asked me what I wanted. I was like, ice water.
Yeah. Ice. I want ice in a burrito. That's really
proud to be an American. Where I can have ice water.
You didn't get you one of those famous Paris burritos, Pat?
I did not. I'm sure they have.
Chipotle was there. But, they had Chipotle. Yeah,
there you go. Yeah,
Five Guys was everywhere.
Yeah, there's a lot.
I saw like four different Five Guys outlets.
There. Don't let them fool you with their little Mona Lisas and stuff. We are dominating European culture. Mona Lisa, the original influencer, famous for being famous. What is this? What is this thing? It's not even a good painting.
She was the original influencer.
Coach Prime's a great American, and he's a great friend of ours because he gives us content. And he celebrated his 50th birthday by becoming a grandfather and sparring with the Colorado Buffalo media.
I think 57th.
Oh, what did I say? 50th? 57th, yes.
50th.
Yes, he is not 50. 57, I'm sorry. 57th grandfather takes it out on the Denver Post and CBS Denver. So I don't know. He wouldn't take a question from this reporter from CBS Denver because another part of CBS reported on one of Shiloh going bankrupt or something. Apparently that was that. He was mad at Sean Keeler, a great reporter, columnist in Denver, because he's not 100% positive for the Buffs. I don't know. He took some kind of combative with some questions about whether the offensive line was bolstered or just strengthened or improved, bolstered or improved. What is offensive line chemistry? A lot of different stuff. He was prime, right? This is prime. He's going to be him. I don't know. I want to believe that I like people who come in and do things differently. It's my core kind of one of my core things that get me interested is when someone's coming along and just going, hey, I'm doing it this way. You guys all do that way. And all the people who do it the other way go that it won't work. I kind of like seeing it work. And for the most part, it has worked for Deion Sanders until the second half of last season. And now we got this season and it's all on the line for it. So I come from a spot of kind of, I don't really care whether Colorado wins or not, but generally fascinated to see if this could happen. But I've become more and more concerned that it won't because he doesn't really recruit very hard in high school and stuff like that. He also took some snipes at Pat Narduzzi, the Pitt coach, who obviously has taken snipes at him before. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on here. But I don't know. Is this cause for concern or just Prime just getting into it with the media and who really cares and, you know, whatever. Pat?
Part and parcel of Deion doing everything completely differently than any coach we've seen in the modern era. Some of it's going to land well. Some of it's not going to land well. The bottom line is, yeah, are you going to win? And he did better than his predecessor last year, and he built up tremendous excitement, but then they still ended up 4-8. And everything that's happened since then has led to more questions of, like, can you really run a program this way? Can you just have players in and out, in and out, in and out, staff in and out, in and out, recruiting completely differently in terms of the way you go about it and who you recruit? So those questions are looming over this season. Last year, at this time, everybody was saying Deion was just going to flop. He was going to flame out. Well, not everybody, but a lot of people were saying that. Then, whoa, we had the month of Deion, the last September, where they were both good and really interesting. And then they returned kind of to the mean, I think, of what people expected from Colorado. So a lot of proving still to do in this year, but part and parcel of that is that Deion's going to make everything a production and everything a show. And a lot of it is literally his own in-house production with their producing crews and what they're putting on YouTube and that sort of thing. But some of that is also going to be interactions with the media. And it's been fascinating to see because Sean Keeler is an old school big city columnist who isn't there to suck up to the coach, even if the coach is as famous as Deion Sanders. And in this day and age where the media is so damn scared of offending anybody they cover because, ooh, we might lose access, he's going the opposite way. And I respect that. And Deion doesn't like it, and he's dealing with it this way. So he, you know, had a flat-out confrontation, not physical, but verbal confrontation with Keeler at this press conference, which itself made news, and then it got aggregated, and all the people could say, ooh, bad guy, Sean Keeler, bad guy. Going after the coach. Cheap shots. Cheap shots. Deion Sanders is a grown-ass man. He can handle it. And this is his way of handling it. It's fascinating. It's different. I don't know that it's an indication, like Keeler wrote, that this is fear from Deion because his program is vulnerable or is falling apart. I don't know whether that's true or not. I just think that Deion is not going to sit there and necessarily play nice with the media the way a lot of other people would, or even just kind of ignore things that get written. So this is what we get. We get an escalation. We get theater. It's fascinating. Bring on the season so we can see what this team looks like.
Yeah, I never understand why coaches who are affected by something written in the media, even though most of them, right, say they don't read the media and it doesn't impact them, then you turn around and you listen to many of them chide the media publicly about what's written. But I don't understand why coaches don't play it off as if it really doesn't truly bother them and don't bring it up, because it makes a bigger story out of it. And maybe that's what Deion wanted. We all know that Deion does like a good show. And as Pat said, he's got his own production camera crews within the Colorado building and on the team filming everything. So maybe he likes a good show and wanted a show. And, you know, the column, the post press conference column was interesting. And as Pat mentioned, it did, the basis for the column was this may mean that Colorado's in trouble this year. If you look at Colorado's schedule, yeah, it could get pretty interesting pretty quickly. And you would think after a 4-8 year that you'd need something more than that, much more than that, given all the hype and the expectations. But the schedule is not some rollover schedule. So if Deion's already acting like this, it'll be curious to see what happens if things start to slip away.
So I read Sean Keeler all the time. He's one of the best sports writers in America and does really good stuff in Denver on Broncos and the Nuggets and, Avalanche. And I don't really read the Rocky stuff, sorry. But Colorado, whatever. He's an excellent columnist and he writes about Colorado football some, but it's not his main thing. He also writes a lot of positive stories about, like any columnists would do in a big city. If you're winning, hey, it's great. If you're losing, not so good. Sometimes the Broncos love them. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes Pat loves the Broncos. Sometimes he doesn't. Bronco fan Pat.
That's correct.
So these
correct.
Are the, this is where it's at, but he doesn't have to do it. I never really understand, I think Deion Sanders would be combative whether, I don't know. Deion Sanders could be sitting there going, I got a 12-0 team here and I'm going to say exactly what's on my mind. Or I could be staring at 0-12 and he'd still say what's ever on his mind. I don't think this is a guy that changes his opinion on what to say in any circumstance. It's what makes him interesting. And he, like Pat said, he's big enough to handle a fight. So isn't Sean Keeler. It's no big deal. Whatever. These things happen, overblown, but it is an interesting, it was an eventful thing. And it does say there is a tremendous amount of focus on the Buffs. And there is such a big amount of people who want to see Colorado fail. There's a lot that want to see him succeed. There's a lot of primetime fans out there. And there's a lot of people that get excited. But there's also a lot because he's come in and done things in a different manner. And he's not part of the club. He's not part of the club. And so I'll read you the Narduzzi part, which is, you know, pretty interesting, right? Now, Narduzzi can handle his own stuff too, right? He had taken shots saying this isn't the way you're supposed to use the portal about Deion Sanders. And he said a whole bunch of stuff. So Pat Narduzzi started this, right? He spoke Colorado out there. So Deion's going to come back at you. And it's funny, right? He's got two guys from Pitt, Deion Hayes, Samuel Okunlola. Okay, two defensive linemen. They're in from Pitt. He goes, first off, I want to digress a minute. I want to thank the head coach of Pittsburgh for really preparing those young men for us. He did a great job. I love those two young men. They're really great players, and they're going to be pros. I heard that someone took a shot at one of them verbally, so Mr. Hayes just wanted me to make sure I added that in for him. Thank you, Pittsburgh. I appreciate everything. I just think that's him. And this is the part that, yeah. And I like Pat Narduzzi because he says lots of stuff too.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah.
And it's like a Narduzzi Sanders feud. Perfect. Perfect. This is what we want. But like, that's just a great crack. That is a great crack, but most coaches are not going to do that. And Deion Sanders is going to do it. So I don't know whether this is him being scared. I would disagree with Sean Keeley. It's a sign that he's nervous. Or this is just Deion Sanders being Deion Sanders. But I do know this. I would really want to get 6 wins or more. Yes. He has set the bar so high. He took over the worst program. And if he's in a bowl in year 2, by any reasonable measure, that is success. The problem is it's not Deion's level. Deion's the one's like, yeah, we're competing for a national title, you know. I ain't hard. All that, it's like, oh, you only went 6-6. Like anyone else goes in there and you're like, hey, this guy's doing a hell of a job, man. We're selling out the stadium. We're selling out the spring game. We're creating all this interest. We're getting 10 million viewers sometimes. But he's got to win 6 or more, or this becomes really heated.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt about it. I think a bowl game is what he needs to deliver this year. And then he's got to show that there's some foundation set for beyond this year. And even if you're going to be heavy portal, you still got to get some people out of the high school levels. You got to get some. You have to have some guys that are in there right now getting reps and prepping and working in the weight room to be ready to play in 2025, if Deion Sanders cares about 2025. That's still something I've got to wait and see personally. Does he care about Colorado after Shedeur Sanders is done, after Shiloh Sanders is done, and after Travis Hunter is done? He said he does, and I hope he does, because I want to see him keep coaching in college football a long time. But that remains to be seen to me. So, yes, bowl game and stability for the program are the must-haves, I think, for Colorado this year.
Yeah, and then, like you said, can you sustain it, you know, going forward? And will he be there, right? Will he be there long term? Is that his plan? And how much can he sustain the program? You know, and they were 3-0 to begin his first season last year. Man, the expectations like hit the roof, right? And it's been, since then, it's been just like this spiral down. So they need a jolt, and they need to get on some kind of roll here to back up all of the talk.
Yeah, I was really convinced, like, if he really applied himself to high school recruiting, I think Colorado would be top 10 recruiting classes. I think that opportunity, I really felt like he could draw kids to come to visit and all of that. And he makes that effort. Colorado, could it get to top 5? Maybe not, but could they be in that mix in a place they have either never been or haven't since 30 years ago? I really felt they could, and he hasn't done that. And so maybe these two kids from Pitt that he's brought in are better than, you know, signing two defensive linemen that were, you know, top 75 players. They probably will be. And maybe his system works, which is fine. I would like to see a little bit more of that mix. North Dakota State is the opener.
Yeah. Tricky. That's a tricky one.
Tricky. ESPN at Nebraska, primetime on NBC. At Colorado State, primetime on CBS. That's how he's starting.
Yeah. And I tell you what, better be 2-1 at least coming out of there. And it won't be easy. It will not. As we said, North Dakota State, you know, perennially excellent FCS program. At Nebraska, which theoretically is getting better and did not enjoy having the field stormed on them last year. At Colorado State, hated rival. I know the dynamics out there. Colorado State is forever the school that doesn't get as much attention, respect, love in any form as CU. And so to beat them in Fort Collins would be huge for them, especially the way they lost last year in overtime in Boulder. Those three games will be super amped. And they, like, Colorado had better be ready. If you start worse than 2-1 there, and then you go into Big 12 play, trouble.
Yeah, and we know how Dion feels about North Dakota State, right? Well, we saw Big 12 Media Day kind of half-jokingly criticize Rick George, the AD there, for scheduling North Dakota State, perennial FCS power, and a program that, in many ways probably has the talent of a upper-level group of five or even a certain some power, probably power conference schools. So that is an interesting one. You could,
I don't know about that. Maybe not quite that high.
Maybe not that
mid group, but some G5s. Mid G5, yeah.
Yeah. So, but you could see, they probably had Colorado talent a couple years ago.
Well, there you go.
Probably could have bested Colorado. Yeah. But now, not so much. But it would be pretty bad if they start 0-3. It would be hard to see that happening. But as Pat said, yeah, you really need to come out of that 2-1.
Yeah, it's the funny thing about FCS, because with North Dakota State, obviously, is a pretty good one. Most famous FCS upset was Appalachian State over Michigan, right? And what I remember this story is Michigan, they had never scheduled an FCS or 1AA, I think it was at the time. And however the scheduling worked out, they could not find an opponent. So they said, well, all right, we're going to schedule, whoever was the AD at the time, they're like, let's schedule a 1AA. Well, let's get the best one we can. It was like an honor. It was also an arrogance, right? But it was like an honor we're going to take some heat for playing this game, but we don't want to say, look, we just brought in, the worst team, let's take an Appalachian State, of course, is winning. And back then, the gap was close. There was less. I mean, Appalachian State's a quality group of five team now, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is not even UMass, right? This is not even bottom barrel or something. Like, this was a quality opponent. And so they schedule them. And of course, they get on the field and it is real. It's not just Michigan obviously blew it. They didn't have a defensive game plan, but they're also like, oh my, there's athletes here. This is a real team. And so there's no honor in scheduling a good FCS team.
No.
FCS is FCS. Take the bottom of the barrel.
Like, especially if you're Colorado. And at the time this game, I would imagine, was scheduled, you need Cadaver State. You don't want North Dakota State.
Well, you got to get into that Fargo recruiting market.
Really yeah.
Anyway, we'll see. There's going to be a lot of three big weeks for Coach Prime. Mm-hmm. I think that is a Saturday, the Nebraska game. It's a 9-7. Yeah. Yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, North Dakota State's Thursday, and then Saturday, road.
Real quick, we're going to have an idea that we're talking Dion all season or not long.
Yes. Yes.
Real quick. Well, we'll be talking about him either way, probably. Yeah, that's true. Because if it goes off the rails, there'll be more of what happened today or what happened last week in the exchanges with media members, I'm sure.
Yeah, that is true. All right. Speaking of Michigan, they just can't help themselves. So since we last chatted, they came down with the penalties over the, quote, not a cheeseburger scandal. And Jim Harbaugh, of course, is working for the LA Chargers now, but he has received a 1-year suspension. And was it a 4-year show cause? Five-year lifetime? 30 to life? What did...
4-year show cause, Dan.
So this guy, for these scandals. Now, we have been very, very consistent on this. This was not just a cheeseburger. These were real violations. We called them moderate, I think we all concluded, right? They were recruiting when you're not allowed to recruit. They were scouting when you were. They had too many coaches. Like, these are not. I hate the NCAA. They won't pay the players. No, the NFL has these rules also. You can't go get a cheeseburger if you're Sean McVay or Jim Harbaugh now with the hot free agent before you're allowed to get the cheeseburger. He would be penalized now for this. So we always said this was real, but they're not massive penalties. They just are like, okay. But then he lied about them, according to the NCAA. It was less than forthcoming, whatever it was. He's now got a season and 3 games for this and a 4-year show cause. Like, that's a hell of a penalty for this.
Hadn't even got to the sign stealing.
Well, we'll get to that. But that's a hell of a penalty for this, right?
Yeah.
I mean, who got a longer suspension than Harbaugh? Like, self-inflicted wounds. Oh, my goodness. Not that he's going to serve it, but...
Moral of the story, well, right? Don't lie. Because the cover-up is worse than the crime, as it normally is. That's how it's treated.
Don't lie and continue to lie and continue to fight about it. I mean, that Detroit Free Press, I think it was over the weekend here, had an excerpt from a book Armin Katayan has written called The Price on basically what it takes to win in college football. And there's a chapter on the Michigan stuff. And the description of that is fascinating. Like, how long it took anybody how long it took Harbaugh to come to the point of saying, well, I guess I did it, even though I still don't remember it, which I'm sorry, that's not easy to believe. And Tom Mars, you know, doing his best lawyer bit, saying, well, you know, he's 9 years old, he's been hit on the head a few times. He may not remember things. Like, okay, come on now. But, you know, lawyers are going to lawyer.
Who else was eating a cheeseburger for breakfast? Wasn't that part of
it? That was the part where he finally, admitted, well, it must have been me, even though I don't remember it. Like,
here's the bill. Here's the bill. They had the bill, right? Itemized bill. And it said it was breakfast time, and there was a cheeseburger on it, or a hamburger.
Yeah.
I can't. I got to look it up. Yeah. They go, well, who else would eat the hamburger for lunch, Jim? I mean, for breakfast. And he's like, I guess that might be me.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ross.
It's why the recruit, I think, remembered, right? A recruit was able to recall it because I think a recruit said it was so weird for somebody to eat a hamburger for breakfast. And so the recruit was like, yeah, I definitely remember it because of how odd it was.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, like, look, neither Jim Harbaugh nor the University of Michigan just, like, readily accepted this as it was coming down the pike. And I think that's what escalated the tensions here. And did the NCAA come after Harbaugh like a little maybe extra special on the penalty here? Yeah, quite possibly. But this was something that built up, I think, to a great degree of frustration on both sides.
Here's the problem. 4 years this took. 4 years. And then the penalties don't mean anything because it took so long that the guy they're penalizing is no longer in college athletics.
I, too, am suspended from coaching football.
So
let me get to the part. This part is funny. Hoping to break a logjam, Mars, this is Tom Mars, Harbaugh's own attorney, and this is from the John Talty and Armin Katayan book. And there's a whole book. I have the book. There's a ton of – it's really good. I just got home and started looking through it, but it does all of last year. There's tons of stuff. We're going to talk a lot about this book. But anyway, Mars asked one of the investigators they would provide evidence similar to what they presented. A small mountain of material, receipts, telephone records, an eyewitness account of Harbaugh and his daughter coming into Benny's, which is the place for takeout, chatting with a prospect and his father, soon landed in Mars' lap. Hundreds of pages of transcripts he condensed and sent to Harbaugh. Hundreds over this visit to the restaurant. Like, when the NCAA wants you, man, like, They were like, let's put it this way. They were after his ass, but he did it. So like, but hundreds of over this. Anyway, the smoking gun bun, as it were, a breakfast receipt from Benny's noting the purchase of all things, a cheeseburger. What quote from Mars? When I showed Jim the receipt, he said, I guess I was there. You know anybody else that has hamburgers for breakfast? That's what I order for breakfast. It's obvious I was there. You can tell them I was there. I still don't remember anything about being there. Fantastic. What a way to get caught.
Yeah.
Smoking bun. Come on, Jim.
It's too good.
So good.
Too good.
So good. Anyway, yeah. He's suspended for a year. I mean, I think about all the different coaches out there that have done stuff. When's the last time you got the 3 games you had to serve and then another year?
I don't know. What did they hit Jeremy Pruitt with? It was.
Well, yeah. Yeah. That one was a multiple year show cause.
Yeah.
Did he get suspended for a year too? Maybe.
Remember. I honestly don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember, but yeah, that's pretty stiff. It is.
Yeah. Anyway, this was all could have been avoided if he had just remembered, but he didn't. So he created this whole mess for himself. Funny stuff. Michigan don't care. Not one bit. The heel turn of the Wolverines, maybe it's always been there, but they have gone straight like Jerry Tarkanian running rebel at this point. They have named their honorary captain for the season opener against Fresno State is none other than former quarterback and former coach James Harbaugh. He has a 4-year show cause, a 1-year suspension. I get, you know, whatever. He doesn't have to serve it. And they are in the middle of waiting for the notice of allegations and tense a penalty from the same body for a much more serious advanced scouting situation involving Connor Stallions. And rather than play humble or quiet, hell to the no, Wolverines are going to trot Jim Harbaugh out for 110,000 people to cheer and taunt the NCAA with it. That incredible.
Oh. The only thing better would be if he walks out on the field with a t-shirt that says, I has cheeseburger.
I don't recall the cheeseburger. Yeah. To me, this like, yeah, this is out Auburning Auburn. This is out Kansasing Kansas basketball. This is out UNCing the UNC legal stratagem in 2017 when they beat the rap on the academic fraud. Like, this is the most like brazen double bird to the NCAA I can think of, because even like in the Auburn case, when it was recommended, hey, don't play Cam Newton, we think he's ineligible. They're like, nope, sorry, we're playing him. They're trying to win a national championship. So that was actively like, we're protecting our own interests competitively. With Kansas, when, you know, they're bringing out the stripper poles and all that business for Midnight Madness.
Lifetime contract.
The lifetime contract for Bill Self, et cetera, while they're under investigation.
But that's signing your coach. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was where, yeah, we're backing our $8 million a year guy, who now a $10 million a year guy, whatever. UNC, that was just legal work to try to get out of a penalty. This is like kind of just gratuitous F you, because Jim Harbaugh is gone. You've dodged one bullet, but there's another bullet coming at you, and you're like, we so don't care. We're bringing the suspended guy back and putting him out at midfield as an honorary captain just to tell you how much we dislike you, NCAA. And it goes to show what people think of the NCAA right now. I mean, if you go back, Tennessee suing, basically sicking the attorney general on the NCAA last January to call off an investigation. And now this, it's like people, there's not any of this, you know, the funny quotes from Harbaugh are like, yeah, we'll cooperate fully with the investigation, which he did not do. He never cooperated fully. But there's no more cooperate fully. Now it's just like, you know what? Screw Indy.
And Indy, I'm sure Indy is paying attention. I'm sure they're seeing all of this. I'm not sure what the reaction is, but I'm sure it's not great.
This to me, Tennessee had a good argument, though.
Like, yeah,
Tennessee had an actual legal argument to protect their players.
Right.
This isn't like we were going to honor Jim Harbaugh's Rose Bowl team anyway, because we always, like, it's an anniversary or something, like, and he's going to be there. Who the hell knows who the honorary captain is? Right? Like, to bring him out, like, if there was ever a time to just be like, that guy, he doesn't work here anymore. Who? It'd be one thing if this case was done and there wasn't another case that everyone is rabid about. Get him, get him, get him, get him.
Right.
And you're not exact. There's no good. Like, Michigan is not standing on solid ground. They're wobbly on the Connor stat. Like, okay, what is? Yeah. It's really about how angry the NCAA is about this. Let's make them more angry. I love when stuff happens, and this is stuff. I don't know. I would not advise this for Michigan, but if Michigan wants to just double bird it, hey, Jim Harbaugh will be hero worshipped back in town. You know, it's been a long time since they saw him. I mean, it's the first season opener he's coached since 2022. Because, I mean, he didn't make six of the games last year. So it's good to see. Kind of owes them some work.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he can actually run out for the season opener for once. Sir.
Yeah. Does the honorary captain get to call plays? Like, does he? He should get up in the stand and pull a cell phone out and start filming the other side.
That would be funny. If they come out in the centipede formation again in honor of poor fallen Jim,
we still got to see whether Sharon Moore and the delete gate, is he going to be coaching? Michigan is so great. You never know.
It's
a Rubik's
Cube. Unbelievable.
Who's on the sideline? Like, is it our suspended coach or our other suspended coach? Who's not our coach anymore?
Yeah. But that reading back through like that free press excerpt from the book, from Katayan and Talty's book, is like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, that too. This was such an absolute show last year of one circumstance after another. Uncle T, I'd forgotten about Uncle T.
Uncle T, baby, yeah.
Ross, I'm in there. They mentioned they started investigating me on why I was breaking too many stories. That was nice. Lame ass. They go
reveal
after
your sources, Dan.
I know. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. My goodness. Yeah. The NCAA investigating leaks. Fascinating. It's a fascinating concept. Huh. Yeah. Investigate me. I am going to settle the case. I've taken a two. I will not cover two Sweet 16s and a Pop-Tart bowl, but I'm not admitting any. Like, what? Sorry. Sorry for breaking your stories. I know. Leaks. NCAA leaks. Unbelievable. The NCAA. Ironclad spot. Yeah, they took this case very seriously. But the problem for Harbaugh is that may be true, and you might complain that they were after him, but doesn't mean you didn't do it.
Yeah.
They gave him a lot to be mad about.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Well, it was the problem. All right, we'll be back after this message. Action of congeniality in college football, the ACC and Florida State University are entering mediation. It's nice. Like marriage counseling. Is that what this is?
Yeah. Marriage counseling for a hopeless marriage. You know, I've heard that supposedly marriage counselors say that people go to counseling for those things too late. It's already irrevocable or whatever. Mm. And that kind of seems like what we're doing here.
Yeah. So how did you think dating the stripper made her feel? Something like that. Like, seems like we're done here. Ross, what's going to happen in this mediation? Do we have any hope? Is there any hope for these lovebirds?
Speaking to people around college athletics and those involved in this situation, no, very, very slim amount of hope that there is some resolution. This is a court ordered, mediation. I think they had like, the judge back in April put a deadline on them to at least try quote good faith mediation, by a certain date. I believe it's maybe next week is like the deadline or the next week. So they needed to get this done. So they'll enter it this week. It could last a few days. I don't expect it to last very long. But you never know when they get in the room. They'll be in person, the two sides, Florida State officials and lawyers and the ACC lawyers. And a neutral mediator will be present and try to, you know, encourage the sides to come up with some kind of resolution. Just to remind everybody, you know, the Florida State is obviously trying to exit the league, and they're trying to exit it for as little price-wise as they can, as inexpensive of an exit as they can. And the ACC, according to court documents and estimates, have thrown out a price tag of more than $500 million, probably more than $600 million when you total up the exit fee plus the annual media rights that Florida State would have to pay back to the ACC. And there's a third part of this that doesn't include price, and that's the ACC just agreeing to let them out. Right now, the ACC owns their television, the television property, the television rights of Florida State for all of its home games, basically for 12 more years. So they'll be squabbling over that. I think we should all keep low expectations for this, Dan.
I'm fascinated by a couple things out of this. Like, who's the mediator? I want to know, are you a sports fan at all? Do you even get what's going on, or do you just get handed a set of facts and you're like, okay, ACC, I would like you to come in here with an open and agreeable mindset, and Florida State, I would like you to do the same, and let's see what we can talk about today. You know, and both sides come in like, no, we hate the other side. Forget this. You know, who is the mediator, and how do you even try to broach getting two sides that seem as dug in as these two to have a productive conversation? Or does it devolve into, you know, like your marriage counseling he cheated on me and she doesn't appreciate me and blah, 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 blah. And they just argue for like 2 hours at each other. And then I say, okay, we're done here. Thanks for coming. This seems like it's going to be completely unproductive, but who knows? Maybe the mediator is a magic person who can bring out the love and understanding between them.
Yeah. We root for love here on this pod. We hope this, you know, they remember what brought them together in the first place.
That's right. Money.
Another thing. I actually think it'll be tricky for if it's really someone who does not understand college sports, you'd really have to explain why this amount of money isn't enough.
Right.
And I don't know that that's that easy.
No.
Because if you look at it and go, well, what do you mean it's not enough? You just went 12-0. So I understand Florida State's position, believe me, but wonder if you don't understand college athletics. And I actually don't know that I understand Florida State. I don't wholly agree with it. I agree with some of it. Yes, it would be better to be financially competitive with the SEC, but you don't necessarily can guarantee that. Like, every business would like that. Everybody wants to be Apple. That would be great. Yeah. But, I'm intrigued at how the lawyers get to this. I mean, the judges, if you get in, or a mediator or whatever. So,
Well, it reminds me like the IARP, the NCAA put together with people who didn't really understand how college basketball works, and they never did get it clearly from some of their rulings and interpretations. So I don't know whether you would be asking a mediator with no background in that a lot, I think, to understand the esoterica of all of this stuff and actually be useful.
Yeah, keep in mind, just 3 weeks ago, we were at ACC Media Days and heard from Jim Phillips. He was asked about potential settlements or just the situation in general. And, you know, he gave no indication, right, that the ACC would be willing
to settle in any way. Said that he is committed to fighting the schools, quote, as long as it takes in court. So judging by that, I wouldn't expect much, but you do never know. There is some coincidental timing of this mediation week. This is the week that schools in the ACC would have to give notice if they're going to play in another league next fall. August 15th on Thursday is the notice, but there's been no expectation, and it's been kind of long believed that Florida State isn't planning on giving notice this year. And I think the timing is probably just coincidental. So we'll see.
Yeah. Gotta still have some place to go. The other thing, I was doing math in my mind, which is a very dangerous thing, so you guys might need to correct me on this, but if they're $30 million in the hole, allegedly, in terms of revenue right between them and the SEC and Big Ten, roughly, over a 12-year span still of the deal, that's $600 million. Which would be basically the same as if they paid to get, if they just left right now, the ACC would keep their $600 million roughly. So what exactly are you getting?
Wait,
out
you're
of
saying
it?
They're $30 million behind each year.
Yeah,
and there's 12 years left.
Uh huh. Yeah.
That's $360 million.
Is it okay? That's different than $600 million. See, check my math. Thank you.
Whew, check that checkbook. Good Lord. Just off my $240 million.
I'm trying to do it in my head, sitting here looking at your face, man. This is not
so
easy.
So close.
Yeah. All right.
Just like to say, the UMass grad nailed that.
Good job.
30 times 12, baby. Yeah.
Close. I was in the ballpark. I was thinking 30 times 20, which is obviously incorrect.
Yeah.
As opposed to 12.
That would be. Okay. We'll be back after this break. Ross, you took a trip to Morgantown.
I did.
Took a trip to Morgantown, and you rode the official public transportation of the College Football Inquirer, the PRT, the Personal Rapid Transit, right?
That's correct.
Five stops in Morgantown and has these little cars that can fit two and a half people.
Wait a second, Dan. Now hold on.
No, I know. They do like a clown
for the number
show.
Of people fit in the car. Do you guys want to take a guess? Do you know?
42.
All right. Is it a single car?
It's a single car. Let me give the dimensions here.
Yeah.
It has eight seats, and there are space for seven people standing. So 15 is the capacity on a normal car. But on a drunk weekend in the car off the tracks, they basically did let's see how many people we can fit in here. So they removed the car from the tracks during one of these festivals in Morgantown. They put it in the middle of the town and they just shoved people in it. They opened the windows as well. There's four windows. They opened them. People were hanging out. Guess how many people they fit in there?
I'm sticking with
42. Dan said 42. You're gonna stick with 42? Okay.
I don't know.
I'm going 51 because Ross, the look on his face says it's gonna be a lot. 51.
98.
Oh my Lord.
Oh, come on.
Good 98 Lord. People.
I stand corrected. Let me tell you, it's such a joke how small the little car is that they had a festival to see how many people could. I mean, like the train that it was like a, it was very like pioneering. I don't know. They try to defend themselves. And obviously I've made enough fun of this little train system that they invited Ross to Morgantown to ride it, to try to combat my misinformation and negativity. I love the train. You get on the train, it stops in campus. It stops at the hospital and the football stadium. Then you go through this little canyon and then your downtown bars. It's great.
Yeah.
It's great. No, it's just why not build a bigger car?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there are a lot of cars. I think there are somewhere around 67 total. I have my notes here, Dan. 67 total cars. But I got on the train with the three athletic department officials, including the athletic director, Ren Baker, and then Jeremy Evans, who is the director of transportation He's a West Virginia guy. His wife's a professor at the school. He was really very helpful, informative, been working there a while, went to the school. So he knows a lot about these cars. We did all the stops from stop one to stop five, went through them all. Pretty cool. Obviously, like 99% of their clientele is students or professors going from class to class or dorm room to dorm room. And they it's about 10 to 12,000 a day. Ride it.
Wow.
But on game days, right, that number goes to about 20,000. So it basically doubles on game day. We did go to what they called the engineering building, and it's basically their office. There's 50 people in there working, tracking the trains. They have these digital computer you should see this room. It looks like the rooms, like the replay center rooms with all the TVs and the chairs and all that. It looks like that. And they can see all of the cameras at each station, multiple cameras at each station. And they have a tracking map. It's a digital tracking map where they can see each car moving from track to track. It's really incredible. And this guy, Jeremy Evans, he kind of overhauled when he came in 7-8 years ago. He overhauled all this because it used to be really old. There are some old things, Dan, in this engineering building. There is a Coke machine from 1960 in this engineering building. I mean, it's wild. There are AC units, like window AC units about to fall out, they look like. There's some old stuff in this building, but not the main PRT room where they track everything. All that's been digitally enhanced. Wow. So that was a cool experience. One of the things that a couple people in that engineering building who have been working there obviously a long time, we were asking them about, hey, what's your best stories, right? Give us your best stories. They didn't get into detail. A lot of the stories are rated X, Dan.
Oh no.
But they do find let's just say remnants in the cars certain things that have happened in the cars.
Whatever.
And as the athletic director said so eloquently, Ren Baker, a lot of bodily fluids in those cars. during COVID, they ripped up the cars for 50 years had carpet. And during COVID, they ripped up the carpet. And they wouldn't even get into specifics about the things they found under the carpet.
It's like cold cases could have been solved.
Yeah.
Take me home, country road. This story just broke back.
Right. our little happy trains.
I mean, I just teased them about the trains. I didn't need to know all that.
Yeah, you know. I was on a reconnaissance mission.
I am wearing my PRT shirt for this show just because I knew we were going to talk about it. Very exciting. But I have to, so they've got the little monitors following these things around. They don't really, there's no turns or traffic or anything, right? I mean, this sounds kind of boring to me.
It's one train.
Turns.
Yeah,
it's not like the Paris train system I just wrote.
That thing was
that thing looked like a bowl of spaghetti. You couldn't figure out where you were going.
This seems, kind of straightforward, literally.
Dorm to bar, bar to dorm. Yeah. That right? Yeah.
Point A to point B with a couple of stops in between.
Yeah, the closest bar, by the way, is about a 2-minute walk to from one of the stations to downtown station. Okay. I think it's Mountain State Brewing. It's right there. So, it is. It cuts right through the downtown and through campus. There are turns. There are plenty of turns, Pat. In fact, this puppy goes as fast as 33 miles per hour. So you're cruising pretty good. You're cruising pretty good. It reminds me, being on it reminds me of Splash Mountain, like that trying to track, like at Disney, these Disney tracks or
Newark Airport. The Newark Airport has the same small car. Have you been to the new?
It does.
Like
no.
You go to the Atlanta, you go to Detroit, you go to some different ones. They have their shuttle system is big cars.
Big, yes.
Newark has got this tiny little car thing too.
Really?
And especially when people, and guess what? At the airport, people have luggage, so it's like it does.
Yeah.
Newark Airport should really be getting our scorn.
Well, this was built for the 70s, Dan. It opened in 1975. Yeah. People were much smaller then.
Yeah, that must be it.
People might sponsor. So it opened in 75, by the way.
Next year.
Exactly. 50th anniversary next year.
Congrats.
I would imagine they're going to do a big bash, and we might have to be there for it. Live taping on the train of the pod.
100%. That's a live pod.
I think that's a good idea.
What other pod, first of all, has brought you this much investigative reporting on something this vital?
Yeah. The fact that I make a couple cracks and then we got, you're in the control room as they're trying to like.
There you go. There was another good, another funny story. So the tracks, obviously they're, when the train's not on them, they're pretty much flat. The tracks are not like a train track. The tracks are on the side, the rails, right? So they're not on the ground level. The ground level is just like flat. So when the train's not on there, it's this flat concrete area. Well, skateboarders tend to get on it, and they'll skateboard along this thing. And there was almost a very bad incident, they said, with a skateboarder in a train. They had people in the engineering building saw the skateboarder, or somebody saw the skateboarder. They had to shut down the trains just before train and skateboarder had a nasty collision.
Yikes. Yikes.
Yeah. Right. Gotta be careful.
So there's no actually like person. There's not a conductor on the PRT.
No, they're all in this kind of engineering building, and they have ability to, monitor the trains there. There's one other thing that I thought was really interesting. So outside of the engineering building, there's these little white Jeeps. I mean, the smallest Jeeps, kind of like, remember the Jeep off of Jurassic Park? It's like that, but they're completely white, and they're even smaller than that. And they're responsible for getting on the tracks in towing broken down train cars. And these Jeeps are essential because they're the only vehicle basically that can make the tight turns on these tracks. They stopped making stopped making this version in 2009. So all these Jeeps, are 2009 and earlier. The new Jeeps don't work because the wheelbase is too wide. But you should see these little Jeeps.
Tiny Jeeps, cool. Tiny trains, yeah, a NORAD style command center.
How's the football team look?
I don't know. I didn't spend much time there. I popped over and saw Neil Brown for a little bit there. Obviously, they kick it off with Penn State and in Morgantown.
Yep.
So that should be pretty rowdy. They are already bracing for that. The trains and the conductors and the engineers and everybody else, it's going to be a pretty wild Friday night into Saturday. The kickoff is at noon to open the season with Penn State. And I think there's real confidence there that, they can do some damage and maybe scare the Nittany Lions and who knows, maybe even pull the upset.
Yeah, West Virginia finished the season really well. That was the season Neil Brown went into on the hot seat. They went 9-4. I mean, that was a great coaching job under pressure. And they bring a lot of guys back from that team, especially on offense. And I think there's optimism they can compete in the Big 12.
Yeah, I think they could be very good. I don't know if they beat Penn State, but put a scare in them, sure. But great start to the season. Penn State visits. 2 weeks later, they're at Pitt. Yeah. Kansas shows up before the end of the month. So really good start to the year. Morgantown's one of the great college football places to go to a game. The stadium's a ton of fun. The town is just fantastic. The people are great. It's just a unique, unique spot. Beautiful, beautiful state. So we'll see. But they're jumping right in. We're going to look back at this Big 12 race, and it's just like, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? It's going to be great week to week.
Parity filled. But can they get a second team in the CFP?
I don't know.
That's kind of a big question. By the way, to end the could wrap up this PRT segment, the guys and girls who get frisky.
Oh, no.
On the trains. The Mile High Club, they call it the PRT Club.
Oh, my God.
Certainly not a mile high, but, get what you get.
PRT Club.
PRT Club. All right. Well, I'm sure there is an illustrious crowd. No regrets. No regrets. Many listeners sent us a couple stories here. This one, though, because we've talked, we did a lot about the chess cheating scandal where somebody inserted beads in a place where, well, you wouldn't think you would during a chess tournament. And then they would send Morse code through the bead to tell the guy what move to make. We now have a new scandal. A Russian chess player is under investigation after allegedly being caught on camera spraying her opponent's board with what authorities said was a substance containing mercury as part of an attempted poisoning ahead of a match last week. The chess people are ruthless.
Yeah, I mean, that's vicious.
Harbaugh's eating cheeseburgers for breakfast and getting honored as the captain, pregame captain. These guys in chess they're spraying mercury so that the person would use the board and then get poisoned. Amina Abrakova faces a possible lifetime ban. And potential criminal proceed. Okay, good. Russian authorities said after the incident in a tournament in the Caucasus of the Republic of Dagestan, the Russian Chess Federation issued a statement said it was an attempt to poison a participant in the championship of the Republic of Dagestan. 34 second surveillance video purports to show Abrakova walking around in what looks like a room of chess boards set up for a tournament, appearing to rub something on one of the boards before looking around and walking away. As a result, during the game, it was the channel identified the woman who fell ill as Uma Gagnat Osmanova. I'm sure we all know who these people are. Doesn't matter.
She's a pod listener. She's going to be angry if you get it wrong.
Uma, we'll just call her Uma. As a result, during the game, Uma's health worsened and she required medical attention. However, no one else was hurt. Pat 40. Do we need to become a chess pod? This is great. These people are crazy. They're poisoning each other just to win the championship of Dagestan.
Anal beads or poison your rival. I mean, you know, those are our topics.
Who knew the world of chess? My God.
Well, like the thought that, like, all right, Russia, they just like poisoning people. Right. I mean, there's always, you're hearing about all these like rivals that are always getting poisoned.
It's kind of their go-to play the hit.
So, because I was sitting there thinking, how do you come up with mercury? But I guess in a country where poisoning is fairly commonplace, I guess it's easy to, you know, you go online and I would like to order some poison, please.
Yeah.
And
is there a poisoning aisle to the grocery? Aisle 9, sir.
Yeah. Looking
mercury, to poison your brother?
Yes. Yeah. Political rival? No, that's, you got to go to the drugstore for that. We don't carry that at the grocery, but it seems very Russian and very strange.
Well, the Russians are going to crack down. Lifetime ban.
Yeah.
Much harder than the NCAA. Oh, Harbaugh only got 4 years. All right, that's our show. We got plenty more later this week. Season's getting close. Can't wait. Appreciate everyone listening, sharing us on social media, and continuing to subscribe, watching the YouTube, whatever. We will talk to you later.